Thank you. How beautiful. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
We are continuing in a series called Evolution Revolution. As we examine humanity's evolution throughout history and then look forward to where we may be going. Because when we look at our past, we find that the cultural paradigm shifts that have occurred throughout time give us a wonderful message, and that is we can change. Isn't that good news? Seriously, yes, that rates applause. It can give us some hope that we are actually on the cusp of a time of cultural evolutionary transformation. Do you have a sense there's change in the air?
Yeah.
Yes. That a shift is happening. The eco-philosopher and the spiritual activist Joanna Macy refers to this evolutionary transformation as the Great Turning. She describes it as a transition from the industrial growth perspective of life, just growing for the sake of growing, to a more life-sustaining society, a life-sustaining worldview. And can you feel the difference in those two ways of living our lives? What if you were here to help usher in this evolutionary change? Cool? Well, throughout this series, as we explore all the various developmental stages of our lives, both culturally and individually, we will see what these various worldviews or perspectives can mean to each one of us personally on this continuing journey of transformation. And then it's important to be aware of these developmental shifts, to see where they show up in our personal lives as well as in the greater community. And you may remember when we started this series that we compared each of these developmental shifts to a rung on the ladder. It's all about paradigm shifting. We called it a paradigm climb. And we began at the first rung last time, where we talked about survival-oriented living. And when we go way back to prehistory, we see that's what it was all about. It was survival, every day the same, needing to get food, water, shelter, every single day. Not a lot of time for any other pursuits, any other kind of growth in any way. And in our human development, we can compare that to infancy. Our caregivers have to provide for those basics for us in order to keep to help us survive. We can't survive without it. Because what happens if our survival needs are poorly met in this era of our life? What happens to us? It's not a good thing. Our growth and our development will likely suffer. And chances are pretty good that we will take on some kind of false notion about ourselves, about our value and our worth, and about how safe or unsafe the world is, or how much people can be trusted or not trusted. And as adults, we might spend all of our time on high alert, right? Looking for those things that we need to be afraid of and aware of. And it takes work to uncover this kind of conditioned behavior. Part of what the cue process does. And whole cultures can revert back to survival thinking when they go through some kind of a natural disaster or a war of some kind. Now, there's nothing better or worse than about any of these rungs on the developmental ladder. It's just that our perspective widens as we climb it. Do you see that? We're seeing more of the picture the higher that we go. And as we leave one rung and move to the next one, we keep all the elevation that we have already attained while we go beyond it. And so there's like a transcend and include aspect to this, to these various stages that we grow through. So today we turn our attention to the second rung. And to help with differentiation of these various worldviews, Spiral Dynamics uses colors. So we'll continue to do that as we go through this series. So far, we have talked about survival, which is signified by the color beige 250,000 years ago. And what comes next in humanity's history? tribalism, which is purple tribalism. We're talking 50,000 years ago. Here's why. Survival requires a group effort. And so we band together in safety-driven tribal structure, tribal order, tribal leadership. Safety and security are sought as we bond together as a tribe. So we move from going it alone and focusing only on survival to banding together in tribes, right? And in our human development, we're talking about those magic toddler years. We move out of infancy into toddlerhood, growing beyond that survival arena and moving into the family structure, the sense of belonging, you see. And if the first rung says, I will survive, the second rung says, I belong. I'm part of the tribe. And when we look at tribal culture, we notice ritual, tradition, shamanism, and something else, magical thinking. Magical thinking. The volcano erupts. The gods must be angry. So what do? That's right. We toss in a virgin or two. Yes, we do. Appease those gods. My talk title is Do You Believe in Magic? But we want to get clear on the difference between magic and magical thinking. Magical thinking says, if I wear my lucky underwear, the Seahawks are going to win. And I'm not disputing that's true. But magical thinking is why a young child like this little guy will cover his eyes and think that you can't see him. My grandson does that. It's just a delight. When I speak of magic, on the other hand, I'm talking about being enthralled with life. You know, a starlit night, the sound of crickets on a sultry summer's night, the full moon emerging from behind the clouds, breathtaking sunsets, the magnificence of the ocean, listening to the rain on the roof, listening to music, having in-depth conversations with preschoolers. That's my favorite. All those things are part of the magic in my life. And this feeling of awe that comes from seeing the magic in your life comes from this worldview. You see? It's the energy of this worldview. Looking for and finding the magic in life. Are you finding magic in your life? Last Sunday, those of you who were here heard me share that at 4:30 that morning, through the magic of technology, I had accompanied my two grandsons on their Easter hunt using video chat on my phone. Now, the real magic of that for me was witnessing a passing on of an Easter ritual that I had introduced to my children, of writing out these silly clues and leaving them all over the place and hiding, and they had to find little treats all over the place. And I used to love doing it. Oh, my God. You know, the best part for me, we always started at the dining room table. They knew that was the first. But I would send them all the way upstairs, and we had, like, three stories. I'd hear their little feet, and then that clue would send them all the way down to the basement. Yeah. I did that a lot. Anyway, It brought me to tears, in fact, witnessing this and seeing. I finally got how magical that was for my daughter when she was young, and watching her recreate that magic with her sons. It was delightful. So family rituals and traditions come from this worldview. Now, I remember as a teenager more than once, my mother saying to me, I hope your children are just like you. And I would arrogantly reply, so do I, because it would be great to have children like me. Well, lo and behold, be careful what you pray for. And as my children grew, whenever I would complain to my mother about their behavior, she would just barely manage not to laugh out loud. So we have to be careful what we hand down from our family traditions. Some of it's not so great to hand down. Some of it's dysfunctional. You may have heard the story of the woman who was cutting both ends off of a ham to cook for a family gathering. And her husband says, "Why do you do that? Why do you always cut off the ends?" "Well, because that's what my mother always did." So they called up her mother and said, "Why do you cut off the ends on the..." "Well, because that's what your grandmother always did, you know, and I just grew up that way." So they call Grandma. "Why do you always cut the ends off of the ham when you're cooking for the family?" And she said, "Well, my pan was too small for it, and I had to cut it down." So it's important to question those things that we unquestionably take on and continue to pass down to our families and beyond. We want to be careful of what we're doing. And there are some things we want to change and say no more. We can stop the dysfunction. We can do that. So we're talking about family rituals and a tribal sense of belonging. And part of our human development is finding our place of belonging. You know, in our evolution to self-realization, this rung is a very important one. If we do not get a sense of belonging at a young age, what happens? I mean, imagine if there's some kind of arrested development during this crucial time when family bonding doesn't happen or it's insufficient. We will, as adults, quite often struggle with a sense of fitting in. You know what I'm talking about? We might feel like a misfit. Have you ever felt like an alien? Like you don't quite belong somewhere? I remember most of my school years feeling that way. Like there's something different about me and I don't quite fit in here. I knew a girl once who was convinced she'd been adopted and her parents had not told her. She just truly could not believe that she was part of that family. But we can all experience at some point this sense of being alienated, you know, not being with our tribe. But on the other hand, have you ever felt like this is what I'm about? These people get me. That's it. They're here right now. First time I walked into a Unity church, I said, "How is it possible this place has existed in my hometown for decades and I didn't know about it? Because here's a whole community of people who think the way I do." Blew my mind. And I felt right at home the minute I walked through the door. I hope many of you have had that experience of walking in here. You know, when Gary and I interviewed for this position, we met with the board and we met with the staff, and I immediately felt a sense of kinship with both groups. And when, during the staff interview, I was offered a cup of green tea, I knew I had found my new church home. I'm just a green tea freak. It was a sign. So a sense of belonging is an important part of our spiritual journey. When you feel like you belong, you know you are part of something greater, something bigger. Belonging is actually a value of one presence, one power, one life. How could we not belong? We're all part of that web of life. Interbeing. The Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh says that the next Buddha is the Sangha. The Sangha meaning the spiritual community. And what I hear from that is that when a group comes together of like mind and creates a consciousness of compassion and coherence and harmony and peace and belonging and welcome, it will change the world. Seriously, it brings forth the new earth. And that's the real value of finding our tribe. Being drawn together with this wonderful goal of being the change that we seek in the world, transforming lives, inspiring people to be a positive, make positive difference in our life. It's all about witnessing and helping to bring forth the great turning. Do you know that's why you're here? Remember, when we talk about evolutionary transformation, we're always talking about co-evolution. This is our own Courtney Litwin's picture, by the way. And the reason I have that is because if you Google co-evolution, Google images, you will find a million pictures of hummingbirds and flowers. Why? Because the flowers have co-evolved along with the hummingbirds in creating exactly the nectar that they want. And so it's an example of co-evolution. The truth is, we can't get to heaven without taking people with us. And if you doubt that we are interconnected, that we live in a web of life together, check out what the science journalist Carl Zimmer wrote about how we are related to one another. He points out that when you draw your genealogy, you make two lines from yourself to your parents, then you draw two lines for each of your parents back to your grandparents, and then four, and then eight, on, 16, but not for very long, because a curious thing happens. If you go back 40 generations, you end up with 1 trillion ancestors, which is about 2,000 times the number of people who existed on the planet at that time. So how do you explain this paradox? We have common ancestry. We're all related. We are all distant cousins. Turn to the person next to you and say, "Howdy, cousin, it's good to see you." We're having a family reunion here. So who is your tribe? Who is your tribe? Because we reverberate to the actions and the emotions of the people around us. You know, birds of a feather and all that. And that's why if I start yawning, what happens? Yes, we all do it. Do you know that if you take the hand of someone who's in pain, that the very act of doing that will help to alleviate some of that pain? It's something called interpersonal synchronization. And what that means is that when I shake your hand, I synchronize with your energy. I come into coherence with your energy field. Experiences that are done with a group register more powerfully in our psyche than solo experiences do, and they are confirmed by the others around us as real. You know, HeartMath has done a whole lot of research around this. We affect one another, but the way we affect one another depends on our sense of belonging. And when we feel like we don't fit in, we move to a default operating system of self-protection and separation. And that need for belonging will have to be met somehow, in some way, as we are moving on this evolutionary journey. And if we don't get the sense that we belong, if we feel like a misfit, then maybe we find a tribe that's not so healthy for us. Street gangs recruit alienated youth during their most vulnerable and formative years. Extremists prey upon this energy of exclusion. Us and them kind of thinking is born out of this. And I have met many young men in prison who have shared that getting into a gang was the reason they were there, and if they could go back and redo their earlier years, they would make different choices. So do you see the power of being the change in the world with each other and the need for it? How many of you have ever heard of Eboo Patel? Eboo Patel, there he is. He's the founder of the Interfaith Youth Corps, operating out of the Chicago area. I read his book called Acts of Faith, and in it he describes his early life. His family emigrated from India when he was 6, and he grew up in Chicago, as he describes it, a brown kid in a white world. Never really fitting in, always feeling like an outsider. And when he was about 12, he started getting into trouble, running around with the wrong crowd. But then he met a compassionate adult who saw something in him and convinced him to volunteer in the Boys and Girls Club, tutoring children and helping them learn to read. And Eboo eventually became a university professor, he still is. And he tells the story in his book about reading about the young suicide bombers in England who blew up the underground trains. If you remember, there were 4 of them. They each had backpacks and blew them up. And as he read their life stories, he had a chilling moment where he recognized that their stories was almost identical to his. And he realized that what was different for him was that he had found a way to belong that was healthy and helpful to the world. He learned how to serve others and to contribute. And instead, these boys in England were all recruited into an extremist hate group because they felt so alienated. And as I read it, I was overcome with emotion as I realized the importance of lending a hand, of welcoming, of opening our hearts to each other, helping people feel that sense of belonging. It's so important. So never underestimate the power of kindness and welcome. So many of our new folks who have joined spirit groups have told us how they felt like they belonged in this group when they previously had just walked in here, didn't know anybody, and how being in a small group was so healing for them. Some elementary schools are now adopting buddy benches, where if a child is feeling alone, they can go and sit on the bench, and others will come and sit with them and listen. They're doing similar things in the lunchroom, inviting others, come and sit at our table. So what can we learn about our own evolutionary path from this tribal worldview? Just know that your kind word, your invitation to someone, your acceptance, your welcome might just be a lifesaver. Do you see it? It might help someone who was thinking of joining a tribe that would lead them down the wrong path to make a more life-affirming choice. And you can be the one to do that. Do not underestimate the power of kindness. I heard the true story about a high school football league in Texas. And one of the teams in this league was a group of young men who were incarcerated at a juvenile detention center where they were going to school as part of what they were doing. And in this school, being on the football team was a privilege for them that was tied to their schoolwork and behavior. And every Friday, they would get on a bus and go outside the prison walls and go to a different school to play football. And for them, it was a little bit of freedom that reminded them of how it felt to be a teenager. But they were always the visiting team. And they were set to play a game at a new school that had never been in their division before. And the coach at this school got an idea before they arrived. He realized they have never had a cheering section. And so he asked some of the students and the parents who would be at that game if they would be their cheering section. And they said yes. They sat in the bleachers to cheer them on. So then when this team arrived, they were surprised to see fans on their side of the field, and they thought, this school has so many fans, they had to put some of them on our side. And they were astounded when they began to cheer them on. They hadn't had that. They'd always felt like outsiders, and people had always stared at them as they arrived. There's those kids. But not on this night. Their fans got right into it. They cheered wildly when they scored. They booed when they got penalties. Now, the team didn't win the game, but they won something else. They cried when they got back to their rooms. It was so affirming for them. But they weren't the only ones who benefited. The people who cheered for them were changed at depth. They were moved when they saw how easy it was to embrace them as their own. The one woman said, he was just my little quarterback. I could feel it. Everyone won that night. Of course, don't get me started on incarcerating teenagers. That's a whole other talk, but it's coming. So let's remember we're all in the same tribe. Right now, you and I are in the privileged place of having a divine encounter with each other. We are all part of the oneness of life. One life is living through all of us. We're all vibrations. I love this one. vibrations in the same vast reservoir of inexhaustible electromagnetic energy. Thinking centers in divine mind, connected to the same source, part of the same web of life. What happens to one happens to all of us, and we co-evolve or we do not evolve at all. Yes. Are you with me? So it's imperative to do this work. Ken Wilber beautifully writes this. Simply think the highest thoughts you can. Feel the deepest love you're capable of. Reach up or down to the highest or deepest divinity that you can experience. Treat others with the tenderest of kindness and the most caring of compassion that you possibly can, and you will contribute to evolution itself. It's so uncharacteristically poetic for Ken Wilber, but I tell you, it brought tears to my eyes when I read that. So, to contribute to evolution, think the highest thoughts, feel the deepest love, reach the deepest divinity, treat others with tender kindness and the most caring compassion. And remember, we are all part of the same tribe. And so it is.